Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is bringing your genius to life. And the numbers to call to get coaching on bringing your genius to life in pretty much every area of your life. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. From outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to begin by setting the table and talking a little bit about our topic for today, which is, in fact, the old catchphrase for my my company. So my company is called Genius Catalyst. My corporation is called Genius Catalyst. And that came from a realization that the essence of what I think actually all great coaching does is it brings forth something that is innate in the client. So in this case, I'm your coach, you're my client. It's just sort of it's the easiest way to hire me is just to listen to the show. And if you call in, I actually talk directly to you. The number is 866-254-1579 or outside the US and Canada 001-760-918-4300. But that essentially what I do as best I can is act as a catalyst to your genius. So in order for that to make sense, let me explore a little bit about what is a catalyst and what is a genius. So first off, to make some context for this, my mom is a PhD in organic chemistry from the University of Brussels. She also was a high school chemistry teacher at the high school that I went to, though I wasn't allowed to take class from her because apparently nepotism, even though she would have graded me 10 times harder than anybody else in the class. And I'm not bitter in any way. But she, so a catalyst is a substance, and this is from the dictionary, a substance that increases the rate of a chemical reaction without itself undergoing any permanent change. Or a person or thing that provokes or speeds significant change or action. In other words, a catalyst is something that provokes change in something else. And so a genius catalyst is something that provokes or speeds up the unleashing of genius. Well, what's genius? So most people think of genius as being a measure of intelligence. But genius defined is, there are three main definitions of genius beyond the IQ type definition that we normally associate it with. One is an attendant spirit of a person or place. And in that sense, genius is a little bit like a genie, a jinn. It comes from the same root. And so genius is that within us which kind of grants our wishes, which makes our dreams come true. It's also a strong leaning or inclination. So your genius is that which you are drawn to, that which you are inclined to, that which you are called to. And it's a particular distinctive or identifying character or spirit. In other words, there's a spirit of genius. There's a spirit of you, which runs through those things that you do, not well, but in a way, originally. And originally, my favorite definition of original is from the architect Gaudi, Antonin Gaudi, is it called the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona is his most famous cathedral design. But he said, originality consists of returning to the origin. So when we get in touch with our original genius, with original thought within us, that expresses through us. So what we're going to do in our time together on the show, what I try to do with you every week, is catalyze your genius, bring forth that which is already within you. And the interesting thing is that when you bring your genius to life, obviously you probably figured out there's sort of a double meaning to that phrase. It is waking it up so you find it in you and it sort of like starts to run through you. And then also, of course, bringing it to life, having it show up in your life. And as I said, this is sort of the basis of the name of my company and what I think we do, but it's also the name of a new program we've got coming up next year. So if you're interested in learning more about the Genius Catalyst program, it's an 8-month exploration of creativity, productivity, and what it takes to bring your genius to life. Go to michaelneal.org/Genius Catalyst Program, and you can read about it. But I'm going to tell you about it now. I'm going to tell you not about the program, but about what is your genius? Why is it that we don't already all live our genius in every area of your life? I'll read you this. This is from the information page for the program. What if genius wasn't the unique preserve of eccentric scientists, temperamental artists, or business savants? What if you had the same capacity for genius as Leonardo da Vinci, Marie Curie, Pablo Picasso, and Elon Musk? Better still, what if the same genius that guided people in the creation of successful businesses, scientific breakthroughs, and great works of art could help you to thrive in every area of your life, leading to loving relationships, happy families, healthy bodies, and true and lasting happiness and contentment? In other words, what if genius wasn't something that, well, Einstein was a genius, but I'm just me? What if the same thing that illuminated Einstein's brain, that, you know, it's so funny to me that they saved Einstein's brain and that they study it and they keep finding that there is nothing different about it, particularly to other people's brains, nothing significant. And there's something behind the brain that when we learn to tap into it, when we learn to allow it to tap into us, allows so much more to come through us and out of us than if we kind of try to do it all with our intellect, try to do it all with our little mini database. Think of a laptop, right? So I will often ask on trainings, okay, I'm going to offer you two laptop computers, okay? The first is got an amazing hard drive. It's got like a multi-terabyte hard drive, so you can fit more data on it than you can imagine. Like, it has unlimited data storage on the laptop. The only downside to it is it can't go online. Now, the other laptop that I could give you has no data storage. It's like a netbook or a Chromebook. It doesn't have any data storage, but it has a built-in modem so that it is online 24/7 anywhere you go in the world. Which laptop do you think would be more useful? Now, pretty much everyone, everywhere in the world I've asked that question, says, well, we want the laptop that can go online anywhere. That's obviously the better laptop, the most amazing, useful laptop, because, you know, we can pretty much access anything we want online anyways, including data storage. But when it comes to our own brains, we seem to want to put all our investment into our brain itself, in other words, the storage capacity, the data processing capacity, and almost none into our connection to the infinite intelligence, the infinite web of fresh thought and possibility. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. One is most of us don't really believe there is an infinite web of possibility and creative thought, but in the same way as if you took somebody from another time and you tried to explain the internet to them, well, hey, there's this web. Where's the web? No, it's not. Well, it's not really a web. Like, you can't see it. Okay, so what does it do? Well, pretty much every piece of information you could possibly want about anything from any great mind throughout history is there. Okay, so you want me to rely on an invisible web of information that I can't see and I don't know if anything's going to be there until I type it into, I think not, right? So in the same way, I know how my brain works, we go and we rely on our brains instead of opening up to the source of genius, that which is behind the brain, the mind. The deeper mind, the universal mind, the divine mind, the source of genius. When the divine mind and our brain work together, right? That's the nature of our genius. It comes through us, right? It's not the same. It won't, you won't suddenly start frizzing up your hair and talking with a German accent like Einstein, right? You won't, I'm looking for Marie Curie jokes, but you know, they're pretty short on the ground. I should type it into this interweb thing and see if there are any good Marie Curie jokes out there. But regardless of who your genius heroes are, there's something kind of cool about realizing that that same capacity is in you, and it will not only be available to you as a resource, it is not only available to you as a resource, it's also the source. It's also the thing that if you make yourself available to it, other people will start to experience you as a genius. Da Vinci is a great example of that. Somebody who just made themselves so available to this innate genius, this attendant spirit of a person or place, this strong leaning or inclination, this peculiar, distinctive or identifying character or spirit, and literally allowed it to come to life through him in every area of his life. And this is, for me, one of the most significant things that I have come to see about genius. If you want to get in, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, dial 001-760-918-4300. Here's the thing. We think of genius, even people who sort of get genius, that there is something in us that is exceptional, think that it is context specific. Well, maybe I have a genius for this, or maybe I have a genius for that, but I'm not a genius. Well, putting aside self-esteem where you think, yeah, you are a genius, affirm it, or, well, no, you're not a genius, but... Try on the idea that you have genius in you, but that genius is not context specific. It is not a genius for whatever you think you're good at or whatever other people think you're good at. It is simply that there are certain areas of our life where we experience genius. There are certain areas of our life we are, experience this spark inside us that lets the best of what we have come out. And then there are other areas where we don't let it out. But that's the thing. The problem is not that it is only available to us in certain contexts. It's that we only go there in certain contexts. We don't even try going online in areas that we've decided we don't know anything about or we're not good at. Now, I'll give you a really simplistic example, because this is where I first began to really see it in myself. So my dad was a mechanical genius. So he could kind of make anything and fix anything. And, you know, that's what he wound up doing. He started a company where they made things out of metal. And that company was so successful and varied that effectively, among the other things that he did, is he built and designed the legs to the lunar module that landed on the moon. They're still up there now, except for the one that's in a museum in my hometown. And he built and helped design the first in-air refueling probes for helicopters. And he built and designed better housing containers for super long oil drills. So that was sort of his obvious genius. That was his thing that you know, most people who met him, he wouldn't have said it, because we don't, you know, that's not how we're brought up. But most people know him would kind of say, yeah, he has a genius for fixing things. Well, I grew up thinking that gene had skipped my generation. My brother would be with me on that. We were both like, I don't know. You know, we both had enough of a genius for making money that we were able to hire people who had a genius for working with their hands, was the way that we justified it to ourselves. But then one day my wife said to me, hey, I need you to, get a blind and fit a blind for the kids' bathroom. And for whatever reason, instead of just hiring somebody to do it, I thought to myself, I wonder if I could do this. Now, the voice in my head immediately told me I couldn't, right? No questions asked. It's like, don't be silly. You know, you're terrible at this. You know, do what you love. Do your thing. right? Focus in on your zone of genius. Don't waste your time on things like that. But for whatever reason on that day, that all just sounded like noise in my head. And I thought, I want to see if I can do this. And so I measured up and I didn't know what to do. So I went online and looked on the interweb. I looked on the internet and sort of saw a couple of videos about how to do it. And long story short, I actually fit and bought and cut and put up blinds in my kid's bathroom. Now, you may be sitting there going, woohoo, big, you're calling that genius? Yeah, that and relativity, those are about on a par. For me, that was something that I would have passed a lie detector test that I could not do. And yet, what I realized was the reason that I can't do it is because I've never done it. And the reason I've never done it is because I talk myself out of it before I even try. Now, while that has not turned me into the world's greatest DIYer, it has opened up a whole host of new things and activities that I can engage with enjoyably. And I've even seen, oh, if I kept doing this, I'd get really good at it. So I've got a friend, George, and George really, to my mind, understands this. He doesn't necessarily talk about genius being infinite in the way that I'm talking about it, but he's a great example of it. He was telling me one day he'd watched Law and Order, I don't know if you watch Law and Order, but if not, I'm sure it's on television right now wherever you are in the world. But he said, yeah, I was watching this episode of Law and Order, and at the beginning there was these guys were planning this bank robbery, and I thought to myself, you know, I'd be great at robbing banks. I mean, it's like a creative challenge. It's like a puzzle to be solved. And I really enjoy solving puzzles. And I think, you know, because I don't particularly get stressed out, I suspect that like I would be really creative in the ways that I came up with to rob banks. And I could probably outsmart a lot of what was going on out there. And he said, then I'm watching the show and these detectives come on and they've got a, you know, track down the bank robbers. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, I bet I'd be a great detective. Because I love kind of figuring things out, and I don't get disappointed or discouraged easily. In fact, I almost never get discouraged or stay discouraged, because I kind of know discouragement is just thought. And so it'll leave a new thought will come up if I let it. So, you know, I could stick with it, and I could really make a study of it. And I actually think I could do really well. And then he's watching the trial. So every episode has the crime and then solving the crime and then the trial. And he's watching the trial, and he says to himself, you know, I bet I'd make a great lawyer. Cause, you know, I don't know anything about the law, but I mean, I would study it. I'd have to learn it, but you know, I bet I'd learn it really quickly because I'm good at learning things. And I'd really enjoy kind of crafting an argument that, you know, getting to know the people in the jury and the judges and how their minds work and connecting with them. And I mean, this went on for like 10 minutes and I was laughing my head off. But the funny thing about it was that it wasn't in any way, shape or form arrogant. It was just somebody recognizing that genius is infinite, that whatever we put our minds to, not our brains to, but our minds to, whatever we type into the infinite Google, we will begin to get answers for, we will begin to get fresh thinking into, and we'll begin to have new things come from us and solutions occur to us that literally wouldn't have come if we didn't think to look. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. We're going to begin with Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Yes, hi, Michael. Thank you so much for taking my call. Basically, since my diagnosis with a permanent illness, I've explored a lot of creative projects for therapeutic reasons. Mm-hmm. I've self-published books of poetry and made audio versions of them, created a YouTube video series, mm-hmm. created about 200 different artwork, images, and designs, did a four-year podcast of personal philosophy, and made a website to share it all. My question for today's topic, and so far everything you've said has been very helpful, and it's opening up ideas in my mind.
Cool.
But my question is, what do I do when I'm having consistent thoughts and feelings that it's all been done before? I've come to the end of the type of creative projects that I've been doing. Basically, I think for a while now I've been working with the large hard drive instead of the computer with the online connection. For some reason, my online connection went off. And I think it's because my intellect is being very critical of what I've been doing, and if it's even if I'm what I'm doing is good enough to just continue doing that. So I want to awake my inner genius.
So really kind of the right question. In other words, it sounds like you really are kind of right with what I'm talking about. So here's a couple things that I think you'll find helpful, but I think also will be helpful to anyone who's listening right now. One
is
thought is not personal. And it's a weird way of putting it. But in other words, we just get a lot of thoughts in our head. And some of them are about us, so they feel personal. But the thought, oh, what's the point? It's all been done before. I've got this, you know, permanent disability. I'm not going to be able to, blah, 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 is actually no more substantive than thoughts like, ooh, she's pretty. I wonder what it would look like if I was wearing plaid right now. I really like cake. Right? Those thoughts are all of an equal basis. There's, you know, none of them have more weight than the other, except for we think they do because we're in them. So we think the thoughts that we're characters in are the ones that are real, and the other thoughts are random, but they're all arbitrary. They're all a function of this brain noise, right? Of the intellect, of the hard drive spinning up. Mm-hmm. Now, when the hard drive spins down, when it settles, then the internet connection's always on. It's just that we get the search results from the internet, and we can kind of sort quickly to those instead of having to wade through all the search results from the hard drive. So in a way, all that you need to do is see it for what it is, right? Which is head noise. And like I say, it seems like it might be significant or meaningful head noise because Dan's in it, but that's almost like a, I don't know if you've ever gotten those sales calls or sales letters where they use your name way too many times because somebody told them in a course that it, when you use somebody's name, it makes you seem more trustworthy. So it's like, well, Dan, the thing that you need to know, Dan, is that people like you, Dan, are really going to benefit from our product. Now, Dan, right? It's like that. It's
insert
a trick.
Name here.
Right. Absolutely. So the kind of really good news about that is you don't need to do anything about that thinking. Once you see it for what it is, it kind of fades into the background. Like if you're on a city street and it's noisy, but you're there for a long time, you stop noticing the background noise. It's mm-hmm. the exact same thing at work. Now, the flip of it. So knowing that, okay, yeah, you're going to have brain noise. I have brain noise. The main character in my brain noise is named Mike or Michael, not Dan for some reason, but you know, it's no different.
Okay.
Right. But what you start to kind of find is that there's some stuff that comes through that has a little bit different feel to it. Now, I can't tell you what it will feel like in you in the same way that I can't tell you what a comfortable pair of shoes will feel like on your feet. But you know, there's some ideas that come through. There's some thoughts that occur to you, some things that occur to you where you kind of go, ooh, like it's just like, oh, that's cool. Or that's interesting. Or, as you start to kind of follow those, right? Follow those inclinations. You'll start to really then get a feel for the contrast between those kind of original thoughts, those kind of wholesome thoughts, those kind of from the source thoughts, and the sort of brain noise that, to be fair, it might quiet down from time to time, but it's probably never going to go away.
Definitely. It's just a part of the human experience.
It is, but the kind of cool thing about the human experience is when we see it for what it is, it's a really cool experience. Like, I don't know if we were sitting, I don't know how this works, right? But let's say we're sitting up in wherever it is that you sit before incarnating as like the different things you could incarnate as. And it's like, okay, I could incarnate as a raccoon, which has the plus side of being kind of cool and looking like an old fashioned burglar, but the downside of being a raccoon. Or I could incarnate, so instead of the raccoon experience, I could do the ascended master experience. And then you sit on a cloud without a body and try and find somebody who will talk to you, and give voice to your stuff as a channel, despite the fact that they then will think they're crazy because they're giving voice to a formless being. And you can have the ascended master experience, or you get to have the human experience. And I got to tell you, the queue for the human experience is the longest queue there is in that place, because the human experience is so freaking cool. You get to have a body, and with that body, you get to have all sorts of sensations of pleasure and pain, and you get to have a brain, and with that brain, it allows you to experience all this data, and you get to experience thought, which is this unbelievable creative force with the power of a nuclear bomb, and you get to have consciousness, which means that you get to experience that thought energy through your senses as if it's really happening in real time. And don't order yet, but when you get the human experience, you also have access to this infinite, real-time, responsive intelligence that I'm calling genius.
Okay.
That's what's on
offer. Sign me up. I'm good.
All right. Well,
it makes such a difference.
All right, my friend. Great to hear from you. Take care. So, you know, it is. It's so funny. We go, well, I guess it's just part of the human experience, which to me is like, oh, well, another Oscar winning movie, right? If you like movies, then bring them on. I want more Oscar winning movies. Oh, another episode of my favorite show. Oh, another installment in my favorite series of books. You know, oh, another radio show with Michael. I added that last bit just on the off chance anybody out there is thinking it. It just makes me smile to think that somebody out there is thinking it. Don't worry if it's not you. It'll be fine. So here's the thing. Let's do it like this, right? If you got a pen and paper, I know I never ask you to take pen and paper, but if you've got pen and paper, right, grab some pen and paper. And if not, you've got your brain, so it'll work fine for this. Jot down some things that you think you have no aptitude for whatsoever, right? Things you think you're terrible at. That, like, oh my God, like I did with my dad, like, oh, that, you know, I didn't get the music gene. I didn't get the speaking gene. I didn't get the baseball gene. I didn't get the DIY gene. And then make a list of things that you're competent at. You're good at, you can do them. You know, you don't really do them any better or worse than anybody else, but you can do them. And then make a list. Jot down, and you can obviously take your time. You don't have to do this all in real time. But the third category is stuff that just comes so easy for you, you don't even think about it. So sometimes when people think of, well, what's my genius? They ask themselves that as if, you know, it's got to be something dramatic and obvious to the world, like, you know, Yo-Yo Ma with a musical genius or Nikola Tesla with an inventing genius, right? Our genius most often expresses is those things we find so easy we don't consider them genius, right? Our genius is most apparent in those areas that we don't think about at all, which is why it's so hard for us to identify it. So what is it about you that other people just really love, right? Maybe you just have a gift for listening. And people really come to you. Maybe you have a gift for healing in some way through your hand, through massage, through your intuition, through tarot reading, can you tell I'm picking the Hay House categories here? You know, or in business. You know, maybe you just have a gift for business. And again, it's not necessarily that you think of it that way. It's the stuff you don't even have to think about. It comes so naturally to you. There's a great scene in the movie Good Will Hunting. If you haven't seen Good Will Hunting, it really stands up, or at least it did last time I watched it. I really thought, wow, this is still a great movie. And it's with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And Matt Damon plays this sort of just absolute genius at mathematics. who is working at a janitor as a janitor at Harvard and kind of inadvertently solves a math problem that's up on the board and gets, you know, comes to the attention of the genius professors at Harvard. And at one point they're giving him these more and more complex math things to do, and they give him this proof that has never been solved, and he solves it, and he solves it in like a day. And when they come back, they start challenging him on it, and he just gets pissed off with them, and he lights it on fire, and they're like running to put out the fire because nobody has ever proved this before. And he goes, "Do you know how freaking easy this is for me?" And it's, that's kind of what it's like. It's not the stuff that you work really hard at and do well. It's the stuff that you kind of don't have to work at all. That's what genius feels like. But what isn't true is that we've only got it in those areas where we experience it. What is true is that we only experience it in those areas that we experience it. And the reason is because we do not look in those areas we've already decided aren't our genius. Oh, well, that's not my genius, so I'm not going to even try. Well, that's not my genius, so I'm not going to waste time thinking about that. It is an entirely different world when you step into it realizing that the genius inside you, the wisdom within, will apply itself absolutely anywhere and everywhere that you look. If you start looking into plumbing, you will start having fresh ideas and all sorts of things will occur to you and solutions about plumbing. You'll get insights into plumbing. And if you stick with it over time, you will become a genius plumber. If you start paying attention to how to change the world, then you will start getting all sorts of fresh ideas about how the world could change. And you will, over time, be recognized or recognize in yourself that you kind of have a genius for changing the world. Now, here's the thing. If genius is limited, if genius is context specific, then it makes sense to try to figure out our genius and then make our life about that. And that's one of the most common paths in personal development, professional development, is focus on your strengths. Figure out what you're good at and do more of it. Now, it's not a terrible idea unless you believe that your strengths are only the only strengths you have. That those areas that you don't seem to have a genius for are genetic, right? I haven't told this story in a long time, but a story I used to tell much more often. When my son Oliver was six, he played Little League, and whatever the precursor to Little League was. And he grew up in England, so he'd never even seen a baseball game. But I grew up in America, and I was determined that my unfulfilled dreams would be lived out through my son. I know, not unique. But, you know, so I enrolled him in baseball like the day we arrived in America. And about 2 weeks into the season, his first season, he came home and he wanted to quit. And, you know, when I got home, my wife said to me, "Oh, you need to talk to Oliver because, you know, he doesn't want to play anymore." And I went to him and, you know, and I said, "Well, what's going on, buddy?" And he said, "Oh, I hate baseball." And I said, "Oh, well, why do you hate it?" And he said, "'Cause I'm crap at it." And I was a little shocked that he knew the word crap, but, you know, we'd moved to America. But here was the thing. I think my wife and probably Oliver expected a go get 'em tiger speech. They expected me to kind of, you know, encourage him and help him boost his self-esteem and go, "You can do it, buddy." But that's not really how things look to me. It looks to me that what's really, really helpful is to see what's true. And so I said to him, "You're right. You are crap at baseball." Because let's face it, most six-year-olds are crap at baseball, and he was no different to the rest of them. But then I said, "The question is, do you want to get good at it?" And I swear his eyes lit up. Because it had clearly never occurred to him that being good at baseball was a learned thing. It was what happens when we apply our genius, when we allow our genius, our inner wisdom, our in-the-moment responsive intelligence to apply itself to a new domain, in this case, baseball. And he was like, you know, you can do that. And I said, look, we're going to do it this way. I'm going to throw you 50 balls every day. You're going to throw 50 back to me. We're going to take 50 swings at a ball on a tee, because that was kind of at the tee ball. I guess that's probably what they called it. And I said, in a few weeks, I'm going to tell you, you're probably going to be pretty good at this. And if you still want to quit, then you can quit. And he was like, okay. Well, of course, by the end of the month, he was the best player on the team, because it doesn't take that much at six. But the reason that it would have been easy for him to have concluded, oh, I just don't have a genius for baseball, oh, I'm just crap at baseball, is because that's the way we talk about things in this world. Well, you're either good at it or you're not. You either have the gift or you don't. You either have talent or you don't have talent. And while I got to admit, I can't remember the content of the book, one of my favorite book titles is Talent is Overrated. It's not that it's not helpful. And in certain areas, it is extremely helpful, right? If you have a sort of a natural talent for something. But, you know, that natural talent, uncultivated, will not take you anywhere near as far as applied genius in that area, regardless of inborn or innate talent. And then if you combine the two, if there is something that you have a talent or a gift for, and you cultivate it by allowing yourself to show up to it and allowing this innate genius, this innate intelligence, this inner wisdom to come through you and come to life inside you and come out in your life, then you will become one of the greats at whatever it is that you do, whatever it is you want to do, whatever it is you're inclined to do, because that inclination is part of it too. So here's my question for you. As you look at those three categories of thing, right? The things that, you know, well, I just don't have the, I'm just not genetically predisposed to this. The, yeah, I'm competent at it because I've practiced enough to be competent at it. And whatever you kind of came up with, and I get this is the one a lot of people struggle with, where you're just good at it. Like, it doesn't really take effort for you. It doesn't even feel like a thing. And the only reason you might know it's a thing is because other people have gone, how do you do that? And you're like, how do I do what? Right? Sometimes people, like, I know it's weird for people who hear this show or see me on stage to, you know, when I say I'm an introvert. You know, the thing about introvert, extrovert is I've always understood it, is what an introvert as a designation really means is, where do you go to recharge? Do you recharge on your own or do you recharge in groups? And I recharge on my own. That's really what it means to me to be an introvert. Not, therefore, I cannot speak in public. Clearly not my issue. But here's what I noticed, right? I thought, I'm an introvert. So I would watch people start conversations and go to parties and get on with everyone and think, oh, they've got a genius for that that I'm never going to have. Well, I remember vividly one day we were invited to a Grammys party here in Hollywood, and my heart sank as it did any time we were invited to any party anywhere. It's like, oh God, I'm going to have to be around large groups of people and I'm going to have to watch other people with a genius for it thrive while I suffer through it. And, you know, I'm so shy. And then I just had a thought I'd never had before. And the thought was, what if you weren't? It was like in my own head, I was like, huh? You know, the kind of the Scooby-Doo. Huh? And it was like, what do you mean? What if I wasn't? Well, what if you weren't shy? Like, at what point did you decide that that's who you are, as opposed to that's just your habitual way of responding to situations with people? And it was so kind of startling to me to have that thought, to open up to the possibility that maybe I wasn't inherently shy. Maybe it was just an area where I'd never brought my genius to life, the area of other people in social situations. And I actually got excited about going to this Grammys party and seeing, well, what would it be like to be there if I hadn't predetermined that I'm shy and therefore will struggle and I have no genius for this and therefore there's no point. And it was so fun that I actually, for the first time, I think in at that point, probably 20 years of marriage, my wife had to ask me to leave if we could go instead of the other way around. Now, here's the thing. There's still a learning curve, right? Waking up to the fact that you have a genius and that it is infinite, it applies everywhere, doesn't mean you will automatically be good at everything first time, right? That's not how learning happens. Learning tends to unfold over time as we get more distinctions, as we get more experience, as we get more reference points, right? That's why having the database is useful. That's why ultimately it's kind of cool that we have a brain as well as necessary to biological functioning, because there are things, but part of the learning curve is that you start to get all these reference points and data points that this infinite intelligence can draw on as it comes out in whatever area you're aiming yourself in, whatever thing you are aiming yourself towards and applying yourself to. But the kind of gorgeousness of it is that once you know that A, you have an innate genius, B, that genius is infinite, which means it is relevant in any area of your life at any time, and C, you will always go on a learning curve if you let yourself. You suddenly no longer live in such a limited, predetermined world. You're suddenly not stuck with, well, I've got to do stuff that introverts are good at. I've got to do stuff that people who aren't good at DIY are good at. I've got to do stuff that people who are good at maths are good at. And you open up to listening to something different. You open up listening to your own inclinations, listening for that thing inside you that is just drawn to certain things, not because you're good at them, not to prove that you're not bad at them, but simply because something in you is drawn to it. And knowing that genius is infinite and that it is as close at hand as getting out of the way of the noise of your hard drive, getting out of the way of your brain noise, getting out of the way of the repetitive habitual thinking that tends to dominate the conversation inside our heads. We don't have to bring anything forth. It's already on in the background. And when the noise in the foreground quiets down, we can hear the still small voice of genius within. And that's just kind of the beauty of how well we're made as human beings, is that we have this genius inside us, and there's nothing we have to do to unleash it, to bring it to life, other than get out of its way. So I'm going to give you a couple more examples. Let me just bring you up to speed. So I mentioned we've got the Genius Catalyst program coming up. So that is michaelneal.org/Genius Catalyst program. That's going to be an 8-month program that I am going to be leading in LA, but also online. So in other words, it'll be you can come live or live stream from anywhere in the world. And that's going to start next February. And you can find out more at michaelneal.org/Genius Catalyst program. If you are interested in doing the kind of work that I do, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you've heard of Supercoach Academy. The next Supercoach Academy is going to be in Europe. It's going to be held in London, Athens, and Prague. And it begins at the end of this month. October 29th or 30th is the first day of the first week. And we have 2 places left. That's it. So if you are interested in that, go to supercoachacademy.com. And if it fits for you, reach out and somebody will talk you through the enrollment process. And then finally, one other thing coming up. If you are in London, I will be doing my annual talk at Alternatives in Piccadilly Circus in St. James Church. So you can find out about that talk. I think it is called Coming Back to Life. That's my memory of what it's called. And again, you can find out more about that at michaelneal.org if you go to the calendar, and you should find information about that there. So back to you, back to genius and what it is that catalyzes our genius. So here's a homework assignment, if you want a homework assignment, right? Take one of those things that you put in the I am crap at category, right? But that intrigues you, that you think, what would it be like to not be crap at this? What would it be like if I had a genius for this? And over the next week, 2 weeks, I want you to approach it as though you don't know your capacity, as though you don't know how crap you are and how pointless it is. And if you hear all that noise in your head, like when I was talking to Dan earlier, recognize it for what it is, noise in your head, as opposed to a really important message for you about what you are and aren't capable of. And let yourself go on a learning curve. And you will be amazed at how quickly you begin to surprise yourself with what you're capable of and surprise yourself with what you produce. Now, that's not to say that if it's art, the very first drawing you make is going to be Picasso-esque. In fact, I think it's Miro. There was a mid-20th century artist, I'm pretty sure, Jean Miro. Looking that up. Joan Miro? I don't know. He's a surrealist artist. And it turns out that my drawings look a lot like his, but I've always thought of him as a complete genius, and I think he is. If you've ever seen my flip charts, they're really funny. But with the exception that you might accidentally come up with art that looks like what a surrealist painter does, you know, your first drawings probably aren't worth comparing to some external person who devoted their life to the craft. However, you will probably be surprised if you let yourself be at what actually comes out of you and how cool it is and how much fun it is to engage with something and watch it come out. If it's a business thing, you'll start to see yourself having business ideas the second you stop telling yourself you're crap at business. I, for years, was absolutely convinced that I'm crap at business. I joined a CEO group because I was so crap at business. I needed to learn from them. And they kept telling me, well, no, you seem to really know what you're doing. And I was like, no. It didn't matter that my business was successful. I thought that was just pure luck because I'm crap at business. The minute I let go of my story and didn't replace it with a better story, the minute I recognized, oh, I'm not crap at business, I just think I am. Which doesn't mean I'm great at it, it just means I'm not yet allowing my genius to come through in business. I'm not yet paying attention to see what happens if I bring my genius to life in this area. Suddenly I saw, oh, actually, that in-the-moment intelligence had been guiding me for years, but I had always discounted it as lucky. There may be things in your life that you don't count because they're easy for you or because it feels like, well, that wasn't me. I mean, it just kind of happened. If you are willing, I'm going to say it again, if you are willing to let go of your story about what you're good at and what you're not, what's worth putting your time and attention into as opposed to what isn't worth putting your time and attention into, you're going to find, if you can let go of that story without replacing it with a better one, right? Without kind of trying to, okay, no, I'm great at business. Okay, I'm great at baseball. Okay, I'm great at painting. Just allow yourself to not buy into the notion that you already know your potential. And you will start to find that wherever you look, you see. Wherever you attend this genius capacity inside us starts to come into your attention, starts to cause you to notice things that you didn't previously notice, starts to either cause fresh ideas to come to mind, or, and I don't know which it is, or wakes you up to the ideas that have always been there, but that you've dismissed out of hand or simply didn't pay attention to because you'd already decided, oh, I'm no good at that. I don't have a gift for that. That's the domain of other people. Now, one of the places that I first saw this, and I already mentioned the DIY story, but another one was I was having trouble with my computer when I was living in London. And as you can probably guess, I kind of, because I write books and I do things online, I need my computer. So I couldn't just send it off to a shop. So I paid for somebody to come out and fix the computer. And because I was really curious what was wrong, I stayed in the room and watched them. And they came in and they tried a couple things and it didn't work. And then they went online on their computer and looked up my problem and tried a few other things and they didn't work. And then after about an hour of trying a bunch of different things, the computer worked. And I was watching this whole time and thinking, wait a minute, he's cheating. You're not allowed to just try stuff and see what other people have done and try that until you find something that works. You're supposed to be an expert. But what I got was the difference between him and me was twofold. One, he did have more of a database, more reference experiences for fixing problems with computers. So there were things he knew to try that I wouldn't have known to try right off the bat. But secondly, because he didn't have a story about how he had no genius for computers and how he didn't really understand them and how there was no point in even trying because the computer fixing gene had skipped him. When he tried stuff and it didn't work, he didn't make that more proof that he didn't know what he was doing. He just moved on and tried something else. And that's essentially what a learning curve is. You try stuff, and if it works, you do more of it. And if it doesn't work, you try other stuff. And you don't turn it into a referendum on your genius, a referendum on your capacity, a referendum on what you can and can't do and the kind of person you are. It just becomes part of the learning curve. And human beings are made to thrive on learning curves. We are natural born learners. If you've ever watched a young kid, right? They're watching the world and they're learning and they're learning and they're learning. If you've ever had a puppy, it's watching the world and learning and learning and learning. Well, we don't lose that ability. We don't really outgrow it. We simply stop trusting it. We stop seeing it as part of our innate genius and start thinking of it as context limited. I'm good at learning this, but not that. I was good at learning, but now I'm older. I'm great at learning this, but I can't learn that. And again, as soon as you start putting context limits on your genius, it will start to look like there are context limits on your genius. It will start to look like, I have a genius or I'm okay at this, but I'm never going to be good at that. What if it's not true? What if that really is not how we work? What if genius is innate and genius is infinite? And all you need to do to bring it to life is to get the stuff that's telling you that it doesn't work that way out of your head. You don't even have to get it out of your head. You just have to stop listening to it. You don't even have to stop listening to it. You just have to see it for what it is. Noise in head, right? There's a great Kafka quote. And I'm going to see if I can find this in the last minute that we've got together about, you don't need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. I'm going to read it again. You do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. And as you bring your genius to life, you will find that the world opens up to you and life becomes bigger and simpler and more fun to live. Have fun. Learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Until next time, bye-bye for now.